You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Karen Rudolph. And we talk about a time where she found that she could no longer keep going and push through and get the results in her life that she had been getting. She calls this a non-negotiable intervention. So I asked Karen at a part of this conversation who she thinks would benefit most from hearing the story she shared today. And her answer was transformational leaders. So I think that's good. I think as the host that one of the types of people who really will benefit from hearing Karen's story is a person who at this time in their life is looking around at their own lived experience and thinking to themselves, hey, wait a minute, how did I get here exactly and what am I supposed to do? So I look forward to hearing from you in the audience what you think after you hear this story. Also, for anybody who's watching this, you may notice that I am still trying new tools and things are looking a little different each time. I appreciate all of my audience and my guests as I work through this reevaluation of what we call my tech stack. All right, if you're ready, let's do it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Karen Rudolph, are you ready for a fun chat?
I am excited to be here. Yes, I am.
Fantastic. I have two warm-up questions that I start every conversation. What part of the world do you call home?
Sarasota, Florida.
Lovely. And what is something that you enjoy or love about living in Sarasota?
Oh, the sun is always bright and shiny here, and that just makes me smile.
Very nice. All right. That is a wonderful start to our conversation. We are going to talk about a time in your life when, despite a lifetime of training to push through and work harder, your body staged an intervention that forced you to reevaluate. And we're going to talk about what you learned and what you changed as a result of that personal experience. I want to start here. How long ago was it that you experienced what you called this non-negotiable intervention?
Oh, gosh, there have been so many of them that come up along the life's journey. But I want to say my very first one was probably when I was in the midst of a divorce. And I was feeling extremely victimized at the time. I was victimizing myself. And I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was losing my hair and I was getting myself sick with the stress. And I just said, no more. And I chose to do something differently. And that was just opened a door of new possibility for me and forward momentum.
Very exciting. All right. So we're talking today on the other side of this transformation. And you actually mentioned that there have been a couple rounds of this, which I don't think is unusual. You mentioned that you experienced, looking back, you would describe this as chronic stress and fatigue. You mentioned losing your hair. I would love to ask you to think back and try and remember, what was the earliest symptom that you noticed that gave you a pause or a chance to question, is something wrong?
Oh, absolutely. It was definitely when I have a mane. My hair is very thick and I literally was losing clumps, and I was in the shower and I pick it up and it was just handfuls of hair. And I said, this isn't normal. This isn't right. And I remember going to my hairdresser and she was the one that said, Karen, you need to go to a doctor.
Okay.
And I thought, yeah.
So, and this was related, you knew that you were in a stressful situation because everybody knows that divorce is stressful. And so that was definitely going on. How many years ago was this?
22 years ago.
22 years ago. All right. So it's a long way back. Okay. So I'm going to back up in the timeline before we talk about how you made positive change. I want to back up and talk about what your life looked like before this. I want to set the stage of what pushing through and ignoring the fatigue and the stress looked like for you. So share with us 25 years ago, before the divorce, what did life look like? What was your family situation? What was your job? Just give us a sample of what life looked like at that time.
25 years ago, I was a former nurse, and I had given up my career to do 6 hours of carpooling with my children. I had three daughters, and they were going to three different schools. And I had a horse back then, and I was rushing to the horse. And then my former would say, "But you're not cleaning the house." And I'd rush all the way back to clean the house. "Well, you have a live animal. You have to ride the animal." And I'd rush back. So I didn't know if I was coming or going. And I literally took one day a week for me. And I knew in my heart, I'm very intuitive anyway, but I knew in my heart of hearts that if I didn't pause and take a breather for myself, it would all fall apart. So I started going to the beach once a week. I lived in Orlando at the time. So I would run over to New Smyrna Beach and I would power walk the beach and pray and commune with nature and really just settle myself and say, okay, I'm ready to face another day. So that was the beginning of it. And I remember my former husband complaining that I was doing that. And I said, you know what? If I don't take me time, I'm going to lose it because I just did not know if I was coming or going back in those days. And then I would have to come home and cook and clean and homework and after school activities. And it was a lot. It was a lot.
I think that a lot of people who are listening will resonate with parts of that story. And so you had professionally trained as a nurse, and you also chose to have a family. And the reality of running a busy household and being what we now call the default primary parent in a child raising situation was stressing you out. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about the story you just shared is not just that it was one moment of one day that you were trying to claw back, but that your initial inclination was that you needed to fill that with more work in the form of intentional exercise. And exercises and being outside is very therapeutic, but I think it's interesting that that was exactly where your mind went then. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So what was at that time, you have three kids, your primary responsibility, it sounds like most of your day, was wrapped up in caregiving and tasks related to the children, the house, and the family. Tell me about your community at that time, your friend circle, your hobbies, if there were any. Let's talk a little bit about what that looked like 25 years ago.
My friend circle was mostly comprised of my children's co-parents.
Yeah.
We dropped the kids off, and we especially the first. The first was always the one where you'd be standing by the door, looking in, peeking to make sure they're okay, and learning to let go.
Yep.
So there's another mom who was doing the same, and we became best friends. And it was great because we would commune together, we would have coffee together, we would pick those kids up together, we would do play dates together, we would exchange, "I need a babysitter, I'll sit for you if you sit for me," kind of thing. So that worked out. The majority of the friend circle was at that point related, school related. And it was, I had friends outside because I had horses. And when I was riding, I also had my daughters riding horses at the time because I figured this way it would keep them away from the boys and the sex and the rock and roll and all that other stuff. And it worked for a time. it got crazy because some were into soccer, some were into swimming, some were, and we all did music, and so I felt it was important to create some sort of harmony in life so they had a little balance of everything. But I was driving myself nuts, and we had an incredible amount of pets at home at the time, which was, thinking back on it now, it was like, "Oh, mom, can I have a cat?" "Yeah, you're going to take care of it." Well, it was me Sundays taking care of all these pets.
Yeah.
School pets would come to us. I would be the one taking care of them. And it just got so overwhelming. And I did it to myself. So,
Right. I call that the slippery slide of the
absolutely.
responsibilities because it all starts with, of course, I want to do this and I can do this. So it, when 25 years ago, your kids, were they in like middle school, high school? What were their ages? To not just to give people who are listening, a frame of reference to compare with their own situation.
Well, at that point, I had one in middle school, one in high school, and another one that was going to more of a special ed school.
Okay.
So.
So yeah, I think that one of the things I call it the great con of being a parent is like everybody talks about how hard the newborn stage is and the toddler stage. And it is without a doubt,
It
but we're not prepared necessarily in a modern sense for the challenge that comes with adolescents and young adults. It can be a surprise. Okay, so once you become aware, so it sounds like life sort of is beginning to crack because you know you're overwhelmed, but then you're also something happens and you and your husband are getting a divorce, which puts more pressure on you and more stress. At some point, you're losing your hair. You go to the doctor. And when do you become aware of the choice that you're like, I can either lean more into work or I can rest?
There was no option for rest at the time. I couldn't see through the forest to the trees at that moment. So it wasn't a matter of rest for me. The rest for me came when I would take my one day a week. And I remember my daughter saying to me, "Mom, you're getting really, we'll call it witchy. You get really, you need a beach day." I was like,
Okay.
new. So that was my triggers to, take a break and just, and of course, when I was at the horses, I worked out at that time. So I did that for my mental space. So I was doing things for me in that regard, but I was just going and going and going until I dropped at night and I was exhausted all the time. So it wasn't until I really got present to what's next that I started looking at me. And
Okay.
then, even when I started looking at me, my kids were like, "You're being selfish." And I was like, so torn up in that space of the guilt and not how, knowing how to separate the two and being the people pleaser and all of that back then.
And so I think you call this listening inward. Yeah. So it didn't happen initially. You were taking respite wherever you could. When did it begin to happen where you realized I have to make a change? Where the listening inward began and the work of going through transformation. When do you remember that actually hitting your awareness?
I remember it very vividly. I was going through my divorce, and my paralegal said to, because I was like, "Wah, wah, 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 wah," on the phone. "He's doing this and he's doing that, or he's not doing this or he's that," And I didn't know how to be anything but the victim back then. And being a product of my environment, my mother was the victim. So I didn't know any other way of being. And I remember him saying to me, Cliff, I'll never forget Cliff. He was awesome. He said to me, "Karen, cha-ching, it's costing you a fortune. I'll sit here and listen all day long if you lie, but the judge is not going to listen. And if you don't decide what you want and what you want your life to look like, he's going to decide for you." And instantaneously in that moment, I remember very vividly getting still and thinking, wow, like, number one, I'm my daughter's first teacher. What am I teaching them? What am I mentoring for them? So I immediately started doing some personal growth and development work because my goal was to get communication so I would be able to speak to the judge at the time. I remember speaking very low and mousy, and I wouldn't look anybody in the eye. And people would say, "What did you say?" kind of thing. And so I had to really learn to project my voice. And then when I started, after my divorce was finalized, it was like, what am I going to do now with myself? I started looking, and this is what I do to this day with the clients. I started looking from strengths, and I said, okay, I'm doing 6 hours of carpooling. I'm pretty good at that. I can become a taxi driver. Nope, check that one off the list. And I just started going down the list. And then when I got to the whole list, I was like, what can I always ask myself, what can I build with this? And that's the preface of the new book coming out. And I just started looking within. Before I looked within, though, I was looking outside of myself. I was pointing fingers outside of myself. I started looking at world religion. I started learning quantum physics and neuroscience, trying to figure out my life, figuring that might be a path. And I'm like, okay, universe, I don't know why you're putting me on this path, but there must be some reason for this. I couldn't get enough quantum physics, neuroscience. And then when I wasn't satisfied with that, I went into world religions looking for something outside of myself. And the one common thread was self-compassion. And I'm like, I'm not being compassionate. How might I do that? And I just started because I'm so curious anyway, I started with the self-inquiry. And from self-inquiry, I ended up starting to look within and becoming responsible for my actions, responsible for what my thoughts were, what my feelings were, and what I was projecting outside of myself. And I learned forgiveness in the past. And I learned to forgive and bless it along the way. And that's how I was able to begin moving forward in my life with ease, and just started expanding from there. I took life coaching courses. I already had a nursing background, and I knew at that point I didn't want to go back to nursing because I had an experience coming from that people pleaser and that not enough conversation that I was already in the throes of, that they had given me a the doctor had given me a script and said, Karen, go discharge this patient. And I'm looking at the script saying, you're masking the symptoms. Like, why won't you get to the root cause? And he looked at me in a huff and he said, if you don't do your job, you're easily replaceable. And I thought, I don't want to be that. I don't want to do that. So I've started making it with all my studying and education that I had started getting in my own self-inquiry. I started looking for ways and means of getting to the root cause, which led me to what I'm doing today.
And I think that there's a lot in there. One of the things I want to ask you as a follow-up to that, have you ever heard of something called the Karpman drama triangle?
The victim,
Yeah, the victim, the oppressor, the rescuer, right? And one of the things that is, and so, and that was actually offered initially, I think, as a stage theater tool, but we use it in conflict resolution and personal development because the hidden thing is that the victim and the oppressor are actually the same all the time. Like in order to be a victim, you are declaring somebody else your own oppressor. And in order to stop being the victim, you realize that in doing that, you are your own oppressor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, and it's hard
Absolutely.
to see, I think, for most people. Like, it's easier to see when you're watching a movie, right? In
Exactly.
somebody else. It's very hard to see, I think, when we're in our own life. And I think that you did a very eloquent job of describing that, in that you were looking for information and knowledge and training in expertise outside of yourself. Science, religion, theology, those are the same. All of those things, self-development. And then you found self-compassion and realized that in order where you wanted other people to be compassionate for you or do it for you, it actually is a tool you have to do yourself.
Self, absolutely,
Okay.
absolutely.
So, all right. So this is a long journey. It probably never ends. What
Never
has
ends.
changed in your life as a result of this?
Joy, personal freedom. And I have the tools that when things happen to me, I get to command my life and direct my life. I'm in the movie, The Art of Manifestation. I have learned to manifest within that space because I let go of all the past experiences and what can I build with this to get me to the next level. The name of my book is Spiraling Up, The Life You Command, which is coming out in March. And it's all about those life experiences. Most people will say, they look at a spiral and they look like they're going downward. For me, everything builds upon the next thing, and the next thing. And before you know it, you're spiraling up and expanding. It never ends, right? When you choose to embody it, the lessons and grow from it, it's exciting. It's fun. I mean, it doesn't. So I'm not saying that it's always easy. It's not, but I have the tools and I've learned to respond rather than react. And the victim will always react.
So those are the tools, but talk to me a little bit more directly about your days and what it looks like on a day-to-day basis. So you get divorced, you're working on yourself, you've still got kids, you've still got responsibilities. They still need to go to horse, and the horses still need fed, right? All of the same work needs to be done. So when you realize this and you start greeting yourself with self-compassion, what actually changes for you?
Learning to take a deep breath, learning to take that deep breath and pause. So it's learning to hit that pause button and say, no, no is a complete sentence. And my children knew me as that old entity of being that victim and the people pleaser, and they would walk all over that. And it was a tough transition for us all. But I really had to start creating boundaries and saying, no, I'm not doing you any justice or doing you a service by doing this for you. I'm not going to be around forever. Let's do it together. What can we do? Who can do this? Who can do that sort of thing? And there was a lot of resistance, a lot of resistance, to say least at the beginning.
Give me an example, if you can remember, because I know this was a long time ago, but give me an example, give us an example in the audience of something that you might have said no to in order to create this space.
Oh gosh, with three children, there were so many no's. The expectation, because okay, so here's a case in point. I was always the mom that would volunteer so I can be present and see what my kids were doing and be the I look at it now, looking back, it was almost like being that super mom. And I was the one that would always bake the cookies and volunteer too. I did a art workshop there, and I volunteered for their, the nurse, the fill-in nurse, and it was just like there were so many yeses that when I was asked, and then I started resenting it. I didn't know how to say no, so I had to really. It's like going to the gym and working the muscle and reminding myself no is a complete sentence. And even though I had this track record of doing it over and over, oh, Karen's the one. Just ask her, she'll say yes. I finally ended up saying no, and people were surprised. And I was like, no, I'm not taking on one more thing on my plate. And I just slowly started, letting go of some of these things and saying, I'm not doing it for the accolades. It wasn't like I was getting like, oh, that's a great job or anything like that. Or, you're a great mom or, whatever. And I just said, no, I've got to start taking some of this off my plate for my own sanity.
And so when you did this, I think that I think it's very nice, the transparency and the honesty, because it was not well received by the people around you in your the people in your family, and also the organizations that had grown to rely on your volunteer service, regardless of its cost to you, which cannot have felt good.
No, it didn't, because what happens is it builds resentment
Yeah.
here. And if I don't open my mouth, they have no idea that I'm being resentful. So I learned over time, didn't happen overnight, but I learned over time to say, I just don't have the capacity for this, or this isn't working for me. I'm really sorry, but perhaps maybe I can find somebody else to fill my shoes if that will be of support. And even that got to be too much.
Yeah.
And I just found that no was a complete sentence. And I never had a, I learned that I didn't have owe anybody an explanation. And that was the greatest gift I gave myself, because I always thought I had to like tag on the but or da 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 da.
They so I am very sensitive to that because when I have a gaggle of kids in my own family, and my husband is always wanting to give a very detailed explanation for like mundane things, like calling the kids in sick, and I'm like, no, they're just not coming to school because they're sick. That's the end of. We don't, unless it's something that requires like a longer explanation. Like we don't have to like fabricate or, and that, it's just like it happens. Like we can just tell them and move on. Yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny. So why, what is it? So there's another choice in here that I want to throw some light on, because you could have had this personal experience and the change in your life and taken that benefit and then just lived your life. What was it about this experience that made you want to share the experience and the lessons you'd learned with other people?
I believe. Gosh, there were a series of things that occurred. I was going through my divorce at the time, and I knew that I wasn't the only one who was experiencing all of the angst that went along with that, number one. Number two, my horse got struck by lightning, and I remember the vet saying to me, "Karen, put him down. You're going through a divorce. It's going to cost you a fortune." And I remember getting still, and I always trusted my intuition. And in that moment, I remember my eyes flickering open really fast, and the vet was like literally inches from my face. And I said, "No, not only is Truman going to survive, my horse, Truman and I are going to become catalysts for change." And I went, I don't know where that came from, but okay. So I would always get these downloads. And when I started on my spiritual journey, I remember, because again, just being extremely curious, Reverend Alma, who was my mentor, she said to me, "Okay, if you want to go on this journey, you realize it's going to be a very lonely journey." And I thought, "No, it's not. I'm, you know, I don't, she doesn't know what she's talking about. I'm just going to go on it anyway." And when the kids were in school, I remember it was like pick two from column A, two from column B, two from column C, and so on. And then after 2, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is, you're going to graduate and become a minister. And I thought, "Oh, piece of cake." You know, and instead of just taking two, I went, "I want all six, all six, all six." And I don't care how long it took. But I knew as I was do create on that journey, I've always had a servant heart anyway. And I think that's something that's innate. We know it. It's just a knowing. And I knew that I had done my fair share of suffering, and suffering is optional. And I wanted to really get that message out there that there is a way to get back to love. And it's a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not just, "Oh, I'm going to declare that my life is going to change in an instant." It doesn't. It's part of the growth and the expansion process to get you to that. But I promise, throwing all of that stuff that I went through, and it was like a roller coaster, I'm not going to lie. And it had its moments and it had its joyous moments. But on the other side, there's such freedom. I get to choose. I have the free will to choose what my life is going to look like now. And I have no qualms about saying no. I have no qualms about saying yes when it feels good to me, because I tap into my own intuitiveness and I embody the work at this point.
That's fantastic. Who, and I, there's so much in there, but give me in one sentence, who is it? Describe the person who you think benefits most from hearing your story.
My journey has unfolded over so many pathways. I'm presently working with visionary leaders. I always said women, and men showed up more than anything else, which was very interesting. But I didn't want to cap it to just anybody. And you know, when you're marketing, it's like, "Oh, you got to pick your niche." And men, wait. So visionary leaders, people who have a vision of something greater than they're doing now. And a lot of people think visionary leaders like, "Oh, business and whatnot." Well, visionary leaders is all about self-respect, self-reliance for your own personal self, relationship to self, relationship to others, relationship to business. And then it goes into your health and wellness. And then it goes into your finances. So I've experienced each and every one of those things, and not only have I experienced it, I've learned about it because I was curious to know more so for myself. And then as I learned it, it's like when you sh I learned from one of my daughters had taken a program for education, and they always said in the tutoring, when you teach to another, right, you're going to learn it differently. And I thought, oh wow, what can I build with that? What can I do with that one? And all of a sudden I was like, let me just start putting this together. And my former sister-in-law said, Karen, you're going to make a great life coach, because people always came to me for years and years, like, Dear Abby. And I thought, I did the life coaching thing. I went through my certifications and all of that for that, but it wasn't fulfilling enough for me. So I wanted to bring more of that health well-being into it, because every thought you think affects every cell of your life, of your body, and every cell is attached to every organ, and every organ is attached to ease or disease. So when I look at that visionary leader, I'm looking at whole. So on my copy, you'll always see a W in front of holistic, the whole, the mind, body, spirit, the wholeness of a person, and to get to where they want to be in life. And most people I speak to want that personal freedom.
All right, that is very, very cool. Okay, so today in your life, you describe yourself as an empowerment coach. What is, share with us the best website where people can find your work.
Well, my best website, which is actually being renovated, is my www.tranquilsolutions.com. However, I'm moving everything over to a school community, which is called Wired and Tired Reset. Because so many of the people that I speak to, I have. When I launched this program just this week, actually, I launched it on my birthday. I have so many people, oh, I don't have time for it. I don't talk. Well, that's the whole purpose of this. I set it up where it's 10 minutes a day, if that. Right? If you can't make 10 minutes a day, then that's something to look at, because you're worth 10 minutes a day for 3 days. It's not hours and hours and hours. It creates the awareness to choose to change. And so I set that up, as I said, most recently, coming out of, I'm always listening. I'm always listening to what the audience is speaking, or my clients are speaking, or other guests are speaking, or other podcasts. I'm listening. I'm always the observer. And what can I build with that? And that's what's really my driving force, one of my passion driving forces.
Fantastic. All right. So that's the website. There's a school community. All of this information for everybody that everybody knows this is in the, but I always say it anyway, is in the audio show notes on the podcast player you're listening to or on YouTube if you're watching it. And the easiest way to get all the information and all the links is to be a part of the Imperfect Adulting Village, which is what I call my email community. And so in there, you have a very generous offer, which is a soul-guided framework to help people get unstuck. And so there's a link for that. The free clarity, this is a tongue twister for me, clarity compass guide. So people can find that at the link there. And you're being very generous. You're including a complimentary 30-minute mapping session to connect the clarity compass to the next step. It's usually $297, but if you use the link in the notes, then and the word imperfect, you get that as a complimentary offer. Thank you very much, Karen, for being so generous with that. Are you ready to wrap this up with my final three questions?
Absolutely.
Let's
Thank
do
you.
it. Let's do it. All right. If I invited you over for dinner and I wanted to make you your very favorite meal and I asked you what it was, what would you say?
Oh, I love Mediterranean, so some sort of a veggie protein mix thing. And I love surprises, so
Okay.
yeah.
Very cool. All right. So very good. When or where do you think you do your very best thinking?
Out in nature.
Out in nature,
I'm
on
a
the water.
kayaker.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Now, third and final, share with us a book, a show, something that you've read, listened to, or watched that you think some people in the audience would enjoy.
Oh boy, I am always listening to audio. So I'm going to say, and this is going to sound crazy because I have for years of 6 hours of carpooling, I have done incredible amount of audiobooks. And they're mostly personal growth, quantum physics, neuroscience, coaching, you know, all that developmental stuff. And I remember taking a road trip and I said to my girlfriend, I just want a regular book. And I got so involved with the whole series that I ended up listening to like 30 different of Janet Ivankovich's book.
Love the Stephanie those. Love yes.
Series. I couldn't get enough of it. And it made me laugh. It made me cry. And I was like, you know, it was just such a refreshing change from all the mental. It just brought me out of that. Yeah. So.
You're the second guest, actually, who has come out and said that they love, and I am a big fan of Stephanie Plum and the Janet Ivanovich series, which is a delightful thing because it can go on forever. She's doing the letters of the, is it numbers? She does letters, right? I mean, numbers, right? It's like 33, 34, and it's the same character and a very similar story, very lighthearted. I'm a big fan. It's one of the very few things that when they come out, I will pay full price when the hardcover comes on, even if I read it on a Kindle, because I just want her to be well-funded and keep writing the books.
Next one is coming out this summer, so I'm like ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Karen Rudolph, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show, and before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone. Signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.